Okay, we resume our meeting. Ben is still not here. Let's start. We are going to talk about paper number 11, if I'm not mistaken. Business combinations accounting for contingent consideration. Amy.
Thank you. So agenda point 11 is about an annual improvement from the 2010 to 2012 cycle to IFRS 3 regarding contingent consideration in a business combination. The comment letter analysis was discussed by the Interpretations Committee in January, with another paper being discussed in March, and this paper gives an overview of the comment letter comments received on this issue and summarises the Interpretations Committee's recommendations. The exposure draft proposed amendments aiming to clarify the classification requirements for contingent consideration by clarifying that contingent consideration is assessed as either a financial liability or an equity instrument only on the basis of the requirements of IAS 32. The proposed amendments also aim to clarify the subsequent measurement requirements for contingent consideration by clarifying that contingent consideration that is not classified as an equity instrument is subsequently measured at fair value, with the corresponding gain or loss being recognised either in profit or loss or other comprehensive income in accordance with IFRS 9. And the Interpretations Committee made four recommendations on this issue. Before I go through these recommendations, I just wanted to point out a small error on page 30. For the financial asset contingent consideration, that should say fair value through profit or loss unless IFRS 9 permits fair value through other comprehensive income. So the first Interpretations Committee recommendation is that the wording of the requirement on non-equity contingent consideration subsequent measurement in paragraph 58B of IFRS 3 should be amended to ensure that it does not imply that contingent consideration can only be a financial instrument. And does the ISB agree with this recommendation?
Yes, silence means agreement.
The next Interpretations Committee recommendation was that the amendment proposed in the exposure draft to IFRS 9, paragraph 4.1.2, should not be made. Does the ISB agree with this Interpretations Committee recommendation?
Again, we agree.
The third recommendation was that all liability contingent consideration should be required to be subsequently measured at fair value through profit or loss. Does the ISB agree with this?
That also seems to be a logical conclusion, yes.
The last...
Quickly, before you run out of
time. Next one.
The last recommendation was that the wording of the transition and effective date paragraph should be amended to ensure that the proposed amendment to IFRS 3 could not be applied without also applying IFRS 9. Does the ISB agree?
Okay.
Amy, I understand the... reason why you want to link it with IFRS 9, but I think without prejudging where IFRS 9 and when it will be effective, I think it is better to de-link this whole proposal from IFRS 9. And the reason I say is that the particular diagram that you mentioned in page number 30 of 33, D2, if I remember correctly, can be somehow put in the IFRS 3 and will not be in contravention with the US GAAP if you are concerned about that. At the same time, not wait for the IFRS 9 when that will happen and all, and get to the same conclusions we want to get to. The definition of a financial instrument or a financial liability can be under IAS 39 or IFRS 9 because there is no change there. Then put the whole recommendation in the IFRS 3. That way you're delinked and you're not held hostage to when the IFRS 9 becomes effective or anything like that.
Stephen?
Well, I would do the same thing. I'd find a way of removing all references to IFRS 9. I'm on the same diagram as PK, so D2 on page 30. And I don't understand the circumstances where you could have contingent consideration that is a financial asset. So Can I ask when that might arise?
Can I ask that question last time?
I think, do you mean to ask when you'd have contingent consideration as a financial asset that would be an equity?
Yes, that would be equity. Yeah.
And we certainly think it would be extremely rare that that would be the case. So rare that I've certainly never seen it in practice.
So in that case, why don't we just say that all contingent consideration that is not equity is fair value P&L and remove any reference to IFRS 9?
Yeah, I agree. I should have mentioned that. That's part of my thinking.
Okay,
so we could do that.
But from a remembering division of responsibility, this is an annual improvement, and we've asked the interpretation committee to deal with it. And unless we think that there's a fundamental problem, should we be going in after the fact and editing to improve it? You know, it's just a question. How involved do we want to be, and do we know their reasoning for wanting to keep the reference to IFRS 9?
But isn't that the closer to the original proposal from the interpretations committee? Haven't they just now inserted the IFRS 9 thing, whereas originally they didn't have IFRS 9?
No, IFRS 9 was there in the exposure draft as well. So if you look in the table above in D1, fall that down.
Okay.
But I think what the interpretation committee did a good job, and I completely agree with them, which I opposed last time also, is that financial liability you need to do through OCI for the own credit and all. They have removed all that and just said straight go to P&L. That's why it is coming more and more close to everything to fair value to PL. Like you mentioned, Michael, I have not seen, I've done quite a few business combinations, I've never seen a financial asset equity coming into balance sheet as an asset. So it's a red herring to some extent. It's distracting the issue. I think the purpose is that I respect Mary's comment, but IFRIC does not have the luxury that we have when the IFRS 9 is going to be effective. So we can make that without, we are not changing their basic conclusion. Their basic conclusion is we agree with it. We are only changing that and say delinking it.
Yes. My question to Michael. Now, we have three projects under IFRIC, and one is on this. Another one is consideration to buy PPE or intangible asset. And then third one is the business or invest property issues, you know, because they're different accounting, and then come troublesome issues, and then make possible that diversity of practice. And can I interpret this, the possible consequence of this conclusion? That is, you know, business and the asset will be very, very critical issue in the future.
I think that the question that you're raising links or comes back to the distinction that we have in the accounting for acquisition of an asset versus acquisition of a business.
Yes, yes.
And there are various factors that differ. Contingent consideration is one of those. But then there are other things as well, such as transaction costs, such as deferred tax and other things. So there are a number of differences there. What we're focusing on, obviously, in this is purely the when you're clearly in business combinations accounting. The other project that the Interpretations Committee has been working on, which we'll be bringing to you at a future meeting, is where you're clearly in purchase of an asset and you've got contingent consideration there. We're keeping those two models separate. We're not proposing any sort of change between those two models. So this I see as being quite separate from that other project.
I'm not against the proposal in the decision. My doubt will be in the future there are some buffer areas people still struggling, whether it's business or asset.
And that's, I think, something that will clearly come through as part of our post-invitation review of IFRS 3 that will be starting shortly. It's that issue about defining a business.
So If we agree, the change proposed by Stephen will that. What do you think?
There are two elements to that. One was to say, well, the accounting should all be fair value through profit and loss and not have this potential OCI for a financial asset equity instrument. And certainly, I think that would be a further simplification to the accounting to go that route. I would encourage the board to stick with the recommendation from the Interpretations Committee that we still refer to IFRS 9. These are financial liabilities and financial assets. IFRS 9 is the place where we give the guidance on accounting for financial assets and financial liabilities. And so I think we should keep that there.
What else would you have to look into IFRS 9 to find out?
There isn't anything.
But why? Why would I have to refer to IFRS 9?
It's a definition issue.
And what do they do in the interim if there's a business combination and they haven't adopted IFRS 9, so they're doing it under 39? So what do they do?
That's why my thing is that you did not change the definition of a financial asset or a non-financial liability from IAS 39 to IFRS 9. That's why I was explaining. So all you need to look at IFRS 9 or IAS 39 is only the definitions. Rest of it can be the D2 diagram with the modification about the asset. Yes. That way you don't need to, you can delink the effective dates because the definition has not changed from IAS 39 to IFRS 9. So don't get hung up on IFRS 9 because the definitions have not changed.
So why don't we, I had a similar concern, Steve, but I approached it from a different perspective. I thought the reason why we needed to incorporate actually both 39 and 9 was the reason you just cited. 39 is going to be around for a while. 9 will eventually come into play. But we need it because, as Michael said, that's where we define and clarify how financial asset and financial liability are measured, either through profit and loss or through OCI. So I think you actually need a reference to 9 and 39.
Only for the definition, not for the measurement, subsequent measurement. That's all I'm trying to say. But subsequent measurement, we have agreed it's all through P&L. Otherwise, you will be confusing yourself.
Not for assets, though.
I think one of the things that I've learned over the years is don't try and repeat or summarize guidance from another standard, in one standard from another standard. If it's going to be in the scope of another standard, point to that standard and say which paragraphs apply. Exactly. And the whole interpretation is structured as amendments to IFRS 9. So I don't think we could walk away without a fundamental rewrite of this from the approach of referencing IFRS 9. I think the concern that, Pat, that you, PK, and Steve raised is, should we only be addressing IFRS 9 or should we have parallel amendments to IS 39 if somebody, if we are trying to make somebody apply this interpretation prior to their adoption of IFRS 9, should they not be permitted or required to apply this prior to adoption of IFRS 9? But I think to try and summarize what the accounting would be in this amendment, outside of the financial instruments standard is the wrong road to go, just structurally.
We've obviously been working on the basis that this, if we were to finalise this as proposed or with the modification we've talked about today, this would not have an effective date until 1 July next year, so 2014. So for a calendar year end coming, that'd be 2015. So we're still talking about a little way out here. As regards to IAS 39 accounting, meanwhile, what we're doing here is clarifying the requirements of IFRS 3. So what we're saying is that, yes, this is how you should be reading IFRS 3. In my view, that doesn't prevent a company being able to look to this clarification that we've been making effective with IFRS 9 and saying, right, now I understand what the board required when they described this accounting in IFRS 3. I can, with confidence, account for this at fair value through profit or loss.
I mean, you don't need to have adopted IFRS 9.
Indeed.
Do we need to adopt IFRS 9 to get there?
It tidies it up. It makes clear and removes any inconsistencies. Because at the moment, there are some inconsistencies, and that's what we're tidying up here.
Yeah, but if IFRS 9 is 2018, for example, what will you do? You will keep this guidance in abeyance to 2018.
Still
yeah, I think the concern is the transition wording.
Yeah. I don't think you need to get hung up on that. I think it's crystal for me. I can tell you that this is very, very clear that you are only looking at the definitions there, and rest of it is all D2. Otherwise, if you just leave it to go and look at IFRS 9 for financial liabilities, then people will get confused because there is a OCI, there is own credit issues. We removed all that.
I think it's actually been done quite clearly. I walked through this with Amy today, and she pointed out that the proposed amendment, it doesn't, if you look at page 25, it doesn't come through when you're looking at the excerpt here, but when you see which paragraph of which section of IFRS 9 it's proposed to be amended, it's clear that it is pointing to you to fair value through P&L. It's just the way IFRS 9 is structured. It doesn't work as well in excerpts.
I just don't like this answer to wait because I all along
that's a
suppose
different,
that.
That's a different
That's a different
point.
Issue.
Yeah that's all I'm trying to
do. You also expand this to say do the same, you must do the same thing if you're still applying 39.
That's what I'm trying to say. Just
and I
do,
think you have to. Yeah. Otherwise, you're making a change that's not going to be effective for a long time.
That's a central point for my argument.
I mean, a number of people raised that in the comment letters requesting the change to 39 as well. So we were working on the basis that, you know, IFRS 9 is effective date of 2015. This would be effective from 1 July 2014 if we were to make this amendment. So it didn't seem to be efficient to also make a change to 39 that would be effective for 6 months. Obviously, if there was a change to the effective date of IFRS 9, then that's a different issue.
Look at the request that was in the CNM feedback next week to tomorrow or something. It's very clear that there's a request to give us a clarity. And honestly, with our stated comments, we need 2 years for the impairment time to be given and all. 2015 January 1, personally for me, as a single board member, is not a realistic time.
That's clear, no.
Yeah. So why unnecessarily kid ourselves that it's only 6 months? It's
in
that not.
Case, it would be safer to refer to IS 39 as well.
Yeah.
I agree. So with that change?
Well, I agree with Mary that I don't think we can do this on the fly. I think we have to think through what the implications of the words are for applying it to 39.
It would just require a lot more drafting,
yes.
Parallel drafting to be added.
We can get there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're agreed on the technical conclusion set out in D2, modified for all fair value through P&L, then we would take that away and identify what amendments would be needed to IAS 39 to achieve that same outcome.
Good answer.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah, there was one last question, and that was, does the ISB approve the revised proposed amendments to IFRS 3 and consequential amendments to IFRS 9 for inclusion in the final improvements to IFRS?
Plus 39.
Yes, 39.
Yes.
Plus
39. Plus 39.
Yes. Okay, thank you, Amy.
Are we going to see these words again?
We'll certainly circulate them to you. If you're content on the technical conclusion, then we'd circulate them offline to you. And then if you had a problem with that, obviously we'd bring it back.
Yeah.
Okay.